If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Also, for me, I was like, well, I don't want to give up any of my profit or my equity in the deal. You know, like I want it all for myself, but that's really not the correct mindset at all. So you can scale your business so much quicker if you have 50% of something versus 0% of nothing. So.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Kay Battle lives in the Cincinnati, Ohio area, is an active investor. She has about 30 apartment units that she currently owns, and as well as an active investor in single family flips. She's looking to scale and grow her portfolio. She also has unbelievable knowledge in the institutional lending space. So excited to jump in with Kay today and really just learn from her. So Kay, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, Sam.
Oh, this is great. This is great. I'm pumped to have you on. Same things I ask everybody who comes on. Where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yes. So again, thanks for having me. I started actually in 2008, like most, or a lot of people, once the market crashed and I saw an opportunity. I read a book most people know called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I'm like, real estate is the way to go. Housing prices are so cheap. You know, I'm in the Midwest, so we see fairly affordable housing costs. And in that time, things were super affordable. And so I kind of jumped in feet first or head first, however you say it, and never looked back. So I started with single family rentals, grew my portfolio fairly slowly because I was essentially saving for a down payment, buying a property, saving for a down payment, buying a property. So it took a while, but at this point I am at 30 units. I have some smaller multifamilies, a 9-unit, a couple 5-units, some single families, some 4-units. So they all kind of add up. But as you mentioned, I'm in the process of actively searching for apartments, 40 to 60 units ideally.
Gotcha. Now that's interesting. That is a difficult or a tough row to hoe, as they say, when you are saving for the down payment and then you buy your next one. And then, you know, whatever your cash flow is, you know, I don't know what you were cash flowing per property, but it takes a while to save that nest egg back up. So what was your buy, you know, were you buying one house a year?
1 to 2.
Okay.
1 to 2. And really one thing that I always like to tell people now is I wish I would have done it differently. Mm. To scale much quicker, I would have used, if I could go back in time and take advantage of what was happening in the market then, I would have done things completely differently and worked and done my best to scale as quickly as possible and buy as many properties as I could. Just because we didn't know how long that state of the society or the industry was going to last. And it lasted for a while, but I don't think I took full advantage. So one thing that I've done now that I wasn't doing then is learning how to have strategic partners and use other people's money, use other people's knowledge and connections to really get to the place where I'm trying to go and where I want to be. So that's one thing that I would do totally different because it is a long, slow road and it's difficult for you to just, you know, save and then deplete your savings and then save again and deplete. So.
And it's emotionally tiring, I think, too. Like, oh, good. Well, now I've got whatever it is, 20 grand for a down payment. Now I got no grand. And right. It's like, this is a good time. Let's do right. that again, I think. I kind of like to see the numbers in my bank account. Somehow that feels more real. And it's not. Obviously, you know, real estate is much more tangible and useful than dollars in your bank account. But that's interesting. So when you say you would have used relationships or leveraged relationships, what do you mean by that?
So one thing that I'm doing now, as I mentioned, I'm looking for larger apartment units. I do flip houses. And the reason why I flip houses now is to build cash flow, cash reserve, things of that nature. But moving forward, I mean, my plan is I have already established partnerships that I have in place now where once I find a property that I'm purchasing, I know where the money's coming from. I'm not using all of my money. I'm partnering with people to be equity partners, active partners, people who already have knowledge in this space, the larger apartment space, since I haven't been there just yet. And I know a lot of it is linear. So, you know, you manage a 10 unit fairly similar than you would manage a 60 unit. It's just a larger scale. But having that experience and knowledge is very helpful. So I've been really strategic over the past few years to network and meet the right types of people to help me get to where I really want to go. And again, if I could give advice to anyone starting out or early in their investing career, is to get to that place much sooner than I did.
Right, right. Yeah, when you figure out early on that I need to have, especially one of the things we're always looking for is capital partners.
Right.
You know, And I'm almost embarrassed to say this on recording, but when I first started out, I thought it was a source of almost shame that I didn't have all the money I needed for my deals. It's like, yeah. Well, you know, we're kind of doing this slow and easy because I just don't have enough, you know, I can't fund, you know, a couple million dollars at a time, which is where we got up to when I was active in the single family space. That's what we were doing in flips and rehabs. And all of a sudden I'm like, you know, I didn't have the money for that. So as soon as I kind of got over that and realized that other people actually want to invest in my projects because they can get an amazing return, I mean, it's a win-win. So
it is a win-win. And I think it is a mind thing too, because I felt the same way. And then also on the flip side, just not understanding the whole situation. You also, for me, I was like, well, I don't want to give up any of my profit or my equity in the deal. You know, like I want it all for myself, but that's really not the correct mindset at all. So you can scale your business so much quicker if you have 50% of something versus 0% of nothing. So it just makes so much more sense.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what was the first real strategic person that you partnered up with?
Well, one thing that I do now for my flips is that I use equity partners for the down payments, all of the financing, and I'm basically pretty much the project manager. Like I handle the projects, the rehabs, and you know, we on the back end, we split profit. And the split is dependent upon how much money a person is putting in and things like that. So it's not always an equal split. But so that's one thing that I've started to do, which has helped me to scale my flipping business, which again is what I'm doing to kind of help build my cash reserves and get me to the place where I have money to put in some of these larger deals. So prior to me partnering with these people, I was, again, trying to do everything myself. So really, I was tapped out at one or two properties because I had all my money in for the down payment, the closing costs, the contractor draws. All of my money was wrapped up. So now I have all of this free money, cash, so I can vet other deals. If I needed to put my money into something, I have it there. If something happens at one of my rentals and I need to go replace a furnace, I have that cash available. So it just frees you up so much more and allows you to scale so much quicker to where you can do multiple properties or multiple projects at once and your money is not all tied in at one or in one project.
Well, yeah, for sure. And it also allows you to stay available for a good deal that comes across your desk.
Yes, opportunities, yes.
Right, because there's nothing like being tapped out when all of a sudden a gold mine comes across your desk and you're like, oh,
Exactly.
Right. So how have you used that in your buy and hold strategy?
So honestly, in my buy and hold strategy, I haven't used that just yet because I haven't been able to find a deal that has worked for me. I haven't looked much outside of Ohio. So I go across Ohio. I'm in the Cincinnati area. But the market has just been so crazy over the past couple of years with investors from all over the country coming to the Midwest, driving up prices. there is very low inventory. So for me, it's just been difficult to find something that I want that the numbers make sense on for me. But like I said, I do have the partners already in line. So once the deal is found and happens, all of that is already in place. So I haven't really used the partnership strategy yet on a buy and hold situation, but that is 100% my plan. And it's already in place and active. I just need to find the right deal for it.
Gotcha. How would you structure that on a larger, say you found a 40 or a 60 unit, like what's your kind of perceived, what does that structure look like for you?
Again, so it would be dependent upon what the equity partner or partners are putting into the deal. But what I have is broken down, you know, from a deal standpoint, you know, we have a credit partner, the credit partner gets this amount of equity, the deal finder gets this amount of equity, the capital partners get this amount of equity. And ultimately, I want to make sure, and it's going to be dependent on the deal, of course, but make sure that the people who are putting in the capital are happy with whatever return they get, and they are priority over myself and any other active partners in the deal. So that's one thing that I've also learned and understand is that you do want to take care of the people who are risking their capital into these deals. You want to make sure the deal is solid and that they're getting the preferred returns and equity that they're looking for with these deals.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So you've given us some good things here to think about. You said you've used partnerships. You would have used partnerships sooner in your investing career. What are some other things maybe that you have done right that you said that you would encourage people to mimic?
So one thing that we haven't discussed is that a couple of years ago, I started a commercial lending business called Common Sense Capital Solutions. And basically what I do is help investors and also small business owners find access to capital in tough situations. So one thing that I would advise or tell people is that when it comes to capital, understanding that there are different options, understanding the structure of the loans that you're getting, how it's going to impact your project, things of that nature are super important. And that's something that I learned as I got into the industry of the lending business. There are an array of different types of loan products out there that a lot of novice investors may not be aware of. So just doing your research, because there are types of loan products that could really help propel you and scale your business. If I know a lot of people like to think that they want to use cash for everything, but that also might not be a great strategy if you're trying to scale, as we mentioned. So understanding what type of loan products and capital products are available to you to help you grow your business in a smart and safe way, to me, is invaluable as well.
Right. Yeah. You know, one of the things we've never really talked about on this show, and you know, if you have any direct experience with this, I've heard the term, you know, loan to own.
I haven't.
Even in the large commercial space, there are lenders that go out there and they lend money, but they set terms on the parameters around the loan such that really they're setting the borrower up to fail.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And in the end, the borrower fails and they take the property back. And for them, it's an inexpensive way to get a huge discount on a property that they're going to own 24 months later.
Yeah. And it's weird because the industry is very unregulated, which is unfortunate because it's not like these lenders are banks, so they're not being regulated by a higher authority. And that's one thing that I really strive to do on a daily basis, is more so than being a broker, is being a consultant and helping people understand what they're getting themselves into, what type of loan product it is, and making sure that it's again, going to be setting them up for success, making sure it's going to put them in a better financial state than they were in prior to them getting the loan. So I do think that's really important for borrowers to understand that these loan products are here to help them, but they also want to make sure they know what they're getting themselves into.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely key. So for you guys on the lending side, are you brokering those deals primarily?
Yes.
Okay. What was it like to establish those relationships with various lenders?
Well, it's interesting because some of them I was introduced through a connection. So how I got into the industry was that I was, you know, dabbling in real estate for all of these years. And I knew that eventually I wanted to make real estate my thing and I wanted to leave my corporate job. And when I got to that point, I just wasn't 100% confident enough to say real estate is going to get me to where I needed to be in terms of sustaining my lifestyle. So I wanted to have another source of income, but I wanted it to be complementary to what I was doing with the real estate. And so I met a guy who had a commercial lending business, and he kind of showed me the ropes and introduced me to some lenders. And it really is difficult in some situations for new brokers to establish these relationships with lenders because they want to make sure you're serious. And again, it's an extremely unregulated industry. So you will come across a lot of brokers that are crooked and that don't take the client's best interest in need. So lenders are wary of that as well. But there are a lot of ways. So they have we have conferences. The commercial lending industry has conferences where you can just go and meet a bunch of lenders and you learn all their products and understand what they will and what they won't do. So, I mean, I have established relationships with over 60 lenders across the country. And they all specialize in different types of lending. A lot of them will do deals that others won't do. So it really is a great way to be able to provide a lot of solutions to people who are in need of capital.
Right, right. And I bet for you, when you got into that industry, it also was kind of a front row, not free, but free education on how a lot of these things are structured.
Yes.
So I think that's, I don't know about you, but I'm gonna learn it as I do it type. And so that works out well. You're like, oh, okay, now I understand this.
For me, and selfishly, you know, I wanted to get into this space for personal use, right? So I'm like using these lenders for myself and my deals too. So, you know, like you said, it's kind of like a front row seat to learning the industry and then getting the benefit of it as well.
Right, right. No, yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely great. Let's go back to when you were talking about partnerships. And if you're going to grow, if your next acquisition, you're looking at 40 to 60 units, what's your team look like that you're setting up for that?
Yeah, so I have a partner and we're both actively looking for deals. He has experience in asset management. So we have an asset manager on the team. We have, like I said, been looking in particular areas. So we have established relationships with property managers. So the property management company may or may not have an equity stake in the deal. It kind of depends on how we decide to structure the deal, but that's another key piece of our team. And then, of course, the lending partner. One thing that I did, which may or may not be necessary for other people, but as I was transitioning from residential investing and knowing that I wanted to get into apartments, I took an apartment buying training course. And that course was really beneficial for me in understanding the nuances of finding apartment deals, evaluating them, putting in LOIs and offers and things like that. So I actually have, through that training course, a mentor that I run deals past. Now, again, he may or may not be a part of the deal, but for me, he's a part of my team as I'm evaluating deals and understanding which deals will and won't work. And I'm putting in offers and things like that. So that's kind of at the moment what my team looks like outside of the equity partners and the capital partners that I would tap into.
Right, right. No, and that's great. And I know, gosh, of all the people I've talked to, almost every single one of them has come out and said, especially early on, you know, that they have a mentor or they have someone that has really gone there before them to show them the ropes. And there's only benefit, I think, to that, especially with the right person on your team to fill that. You know, every sport has a coach for a reason. So that's
right, exactly.
Yeah, so that's good for you. Let's jump here into the final 4K if we can. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Again, I know I've said it multiple times, but I really strongly believe in partnerships. Make sure you're networking, finding strategic partners, and make that a focus area of your business.
Got it. Got it. That's great. That's great. What is one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
I enjoy reading. I try to read a book at least once a month. And right now I'm reading, again, Think and Grow Rich. So that's a favorite book of mine, just to keep my mind, you know, focused on the right things.
Right, right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Those are books that you can read and reread. And each time you'll find something new and you go,
exactly.
Oh, I'm gonna tuck that one away. That's good. That's good. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
I try to make the world a better place every day, especially in my lending business. So like I mentioned before, I really try to help people understanding their situation, ensuring that they're being set up for success. And a lot of people, having access to capital is the difference between having no business and having a business. So to me, it's really important.
Right, right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. I think you said it. Yeah. I mean, that is the difference between no business or business. And that's important. That's very yes. important. That's awesome. Kay, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Yeah, you can connect with me on LinkedIn under Kay Battle, or you can visit my website for the lending business, which is Common Sense Capital Solutions. And the website is www.cscapitalsolutions.com.
Wonderful. Kay, thanks for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. Have a good one.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.